Episode 4004, Grow Great, the podcast. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Today is Monday, January the 11th, 2016. Don't be offensive. IBM's white shirt strategy. That's today's show, and we'll do it next. As we embark on today's show, episode 4004, start of a new year, lots of conversation about marketing and biz dev and all the usual suspects when you begin a new year. Our next door neighbor was an IBMer. She traveled a lot. She was single, so she said, she didn't mind it very much. Rhonda and I, we had two rugrats running around loose on the neighborhood at the time. Little kids, preschoolers. She drove a BMW. We did not. It was the early 80s. And life inside IBM, well, it was assumed to be as good as it gets in corporate America. Now, I was never attracted to corporate America. And I was never attracted to travel. So I didn't have much envy for this woman's lifestyle, but it was not lost on me that she was living right next door to me, living a lifestyle as a single person that I was living with a family of four. And yes, I admit, I remember thinking, what's wrong with this picture? These were the days where IBM set the standard for sales and service. You probably don't remember such a time as that unless you're as old or older than me. IBM was the safe bet for any corporate expenditure. Nobody was ever going to get fired or even endure criticism because they had selected IBM as their vendor. And so IBM representatives, they really had a leg up on the competition. And they were quite literally button-down professionals. I mean, it was just kind of common knowledge that if you did business with IBM and you had any kind of a problem, IBM, they would fly over your place of business and they would just parachute from the sky to take care of your problems. That it's what they were known for. My neighbor didn't have it quite as regimented, I don't suppose, as her male counterparts, although I can almost guarantee in the 1980s she endured, I would guarantee, significantly higher scrutiny as a woman. The men of IBM did not wear facial hair, and they wore only white shirts. And as she explained it to me, IBM wanted to make sure they didn't offend a prospect or a customer. Research evidently had shown them, and they were quite known for their research at the time. It had shown them that some people don't like facial hair. So, no facial hair. How can you be offended because someone does not have facial hair? Research had also shown that people assume a degree of professionalism with a white shirt that may not be assumed if a person wore a blue shirt or a yellow shirt or any other color shirt. So white shirts it is. IBM has even chronicled their attire through the years at their website. I've got a link to this in the show notes for today's episode that you can click on and you can go see from the early days up to very modern days, the years of IBM attire. Just go to the website, growgreat.com, episode 4004. I've never been an IBM insider, so I don't profess that I have knowledge if this was ever an official stance or if it was a skunk work that management, just parlayed onto the workforce. Doesn't matter either way. I've had multiple IBMers through the years tell me the same thing. Now, I admit, my information is all circa the 1980s. Well, the other day, somebody engaged me in a conversation about selling and appealing to as many people as possible. And of course, we began to quickly talk about all the profanity that we hear and that we see today. Something that neither of us experienced coming up through the ranks. F-bombs are all over the place in social media posts and speeches and blog posts. And yes, there's tons of informal marketing going on today. Back in our day, it was mostly limited to one-on-one conversations. This informal marketing, I call it informal marketing. This podcast could be considered a form of informal marketing. It's not out there in your face. I really don't even give very many calls to action. I take more heat. That's an overstatement. I get more questions and more criticisms from listeners who say, what are you selling? Especially in the early days of this podcast, because I wasn't doing it nearly as strategic as people may have thought. I was just trying to pass on information. I mean, for me, this was really, it began more of a legacy project. So the informal marketing that you see going on today, and some of it, it looks informal, but it's very overt. It's just kind of hard to see. With blog posts and with podcasts and with videos and, you know, just all the stuff that we have now, primarily made available because of the internet. You can judge for yourself in such matters, but our focal point growing up was really, it was built on the old premise that IBM followed. And that premise very simply was, don't be offensive. Don't be offensive. And there's little doubt that it worked. I mean, well, coupled with great products and great service and this intense focus that IBM had on the customer, I'm not about to credit IBM's success of the 1980s on white shirts and no facial hair on men. Facial hair on women, that would be very offensive. But I do understand the thought process. I don't know if that's a demographic thing or not. Maybe it is. I even remember reading somewhere an IBM executive make what seemed like a sound argument to me. He wrote that if a male IBM sales rep were to visit a prospect who didn't like men with beards, then he, the IBM rep, if he had a beard, why put yourself at a disadvantage before you ever get the opportunity to inform this prospect what you might be able to do for him and for his business? Well, that made perfect sense to me. I mean, why put yourself at a disadvantage before you've ever even had a chance to open your mouth and have a conversation? That still makes sense to me. The world has changed. Today in 2016, we're not dealing with the same culture that existed in the 1980s. And for some, being offensive, I have had people tell me to my face, being offensive is a unique positioning that is intentionally crafted. No, I'm not attracted to it, but evidently many are. I mean, just go on social media, look closely at how profanity has infiltrated the headlines of content marketing, blog posts, podcasts, articles, videos, photos, F-bombs, S-bombs, and everything in between. Being offensive has become a niche marketing tactic or strategy to prove hipness. Hey, the fact that I even use the term hipness proves to you how unhip I am. And so I wonder, are we talking about being offensive or are we talking about being unique? Because there's a difference. I admire IBM's strategy of being inoffensive. The atmosphere is clouded because I think some people misunderstand offensive and uniqueness. I'm personally opposed to the former, but I'm a big fan of the latter. I mean, might some people be offended or put off by your uniqueness? Well, of course, anything's possible. I'll give you an illustration. I even put a photograph. I had to block the guy's face out of the photograph. And no, it's not me. There's a photograph of a guy who's wearing something that it doesn't offend me, but it puts me off. I hate button-down collared shirts worn with a tie. It's a personal preference thing. Now, I'm not a guy. I don't like the spread collar. Spread collars are really popular. I hate them. I absolutely despise them. I would never wear them. Of course, there is something too when you got a fat head and a fat neck. But this button-down collar shirt worn with a tie. Now, I wear some button-down shirts, but the collar's left unbuttoned. It's just an open shirt, no tie. Worn with a tie, they look rumpled. They look awful. I'm not offended by them, but it's not an attractive look to me. You know who wears this a lot? Nearly every time I see this person, photographed or on camera, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett wears button-down collared shirts, and his collars look just like this photograph that I've got over at the website, growgreat.com, episode 4004. It's just not an attractive look to me. So whenever I see a guy wearing it, it bugs me. Now, would I refuse to buy from such a person? I might not. I mean, there would be other elements involved. I'm not so shallow as to tell you that if somebody came in, they were spectacular and they had the latest, greatest, coolest, trickest thing, I would say, well, you know, I'd like to buy from you, but that collar there, I can't be hanging with that collar. I mean, look at this guy. And this guy's got his tie loosened. I mean, it would look worse if he had the tie cinched up to his neck. I'm crazy enough that I'd be looking at this person. I'd be thinking, what's he thinking? He's got to know this is not a good look. But here's the deal. I'm not offended by it. Kind of put off by it. Kind of distracted by it. Probably a better way to phrase it. Offensive is defined as causing someone to feel deeply hurt, upset, or angry. Okay, come on, no. No, the button-down collared shirt with a tie does not offend me. It does not cause me to feel deeply hurt or upset or angry. But I can't imagine facial hair on a man causing offense, even in the 1980s when I wore a mustache. Yeah, I was young then. But there were plenty of old heads who ran companies, though, and they had no tolerance for men with facial hair working in their companies. I knew such men. So in the 1980s, see, this made complete sense to me. I understood it. Now, I didn't work for IBM, so it was not a problem for me. And I didn't work for people that had this kind of an attitude. But it did make sense to me that IBM wanted clean-shaven representatives, and I understood why. Now, there's a vast difference in that button-down collar with a tie look and dropping F-bombs. And dropping F-bombs is just, it's just one of many things that we could, I'm just using that for illustration purposes. The question and the lesson for us, I think, is what can we do or avoid doing to attract our prospects? Offensive also means actively aggressive, attacking. Profanity-laced content, I think, is actively aggressive. I mean, intentionally so. I've heard some marketers who regularly use it, and they claim that, well, it's who I am, and it's how I roll. And they argue that it helps them dissect the market and separate the people willing to do business with them versus those that are not willing. Basically, they think it kind of clears the way toward more effective reach. Namely, it gives them a leg up on reaching their ideal prospect because their ideal prospect talks that way, behaves that way, and is attracted to other people who behave that way. Oh, okay. I'm not sure about all that, but if that's how they want to roll, it's no skin off my nose. I'm just unsure that I would buy it. I mean, well, I wouldn't do business with it, I can tell you, but I'm not sure I really buy the argument. I mean, there are some big-name social media rock stars. I could name them. You would know their names, who regularly use profanity. Seems to me an awful lot of people are copying that, wrongly assuming that their profanity is the one reason for their popularity. Instead, I would encourage those people to consider it, the substance of their content, not their profanity-centric style. I acknowledge that we are in an age where style over substance is often a reality. I mean, we often ascribe substance where style exists. And where style is absent, well, we think there must not be any substance. It's true in music. It's true in art. It's true in business. It's probably true in a lot of other spaces as well. Choose your strategy. I'm only encouraging us to consider our strategy carefully so that we can give ourselves the best opportunity for success. The other day, I got a meeting with a top business owner. He started the business in the late 60s. I'm old. He's older. I put on a black suit, a white shirt, and a striped tie. Yes, I admit I dressed with him in mind. I felt it was the respectful thing to do. Now, I know others might criticize me for that, and they would say, well, dress the way you want. Be who you want to be. Be who you really are. Listen, if it were up to me, I'd wear black jeans, my New Balance sneakers, and a fleece pullover. But I wanted to have a good interaction with this business owner. I'm trying to engage him in meaningful conversation. I'm not trying to put him off. I'm not trying to give him any reason to think, well, I don't want to spend any time with this guy. I'm not in the fashion trade. If I were, okay, perhaps I could understand the argument to dress like I want. I'm in the coaching and consulting business. I need my prospects to talk to me. I'm not going in guns blazing, telling them all about me. I'm asking about them. I want them to tell me more about themselves and their businesses. How I dress and how I speak could easily and quickly ruin that. Well, as the owner came to the lobby to greet me, I'm sitting in this big leather sofa that they've got in their lobby. Well, I stood up, I shook his hand firmly, looked him in the eye, quickly thanked him for making time to see me. And as he ushers me into this small conference room, he introduces me to his assistant. I introduce myself to her. I shake her hand. I express pleasure in meeting her. It's manners. It's professional etiquette. It's appropriate dress, appropriate behavior. At least that's how I view it. And as we begin to talk, I'm rather certain that he got some sense of me and my uniqueness. I hope so. I didn't talk about myself. I asked him about his career and his business. That's what I was mostly interested in. I wasn't interested in finding somebody that I had never met before and being able to hold forth by telling them all about myself. I mean, this guy was super smart, very bright, very engaging, a high performer. The meeting went well, and I was thrilled to have met him. In fact, I'll go you one better. The meeting went twice as long because he did it, not me. I didn't keep him. He kept me. That's his prerogative. He owns the joint. Will we do business? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But I know I had a good meeting because I was prepared and because I made him the focal point of my preparation and my actions. He was the centerpiece of the meeting, not me. Well, my question is, who's this about? I'm mostly put off by some of the marketing and positioning that I see because I think the focal point is wrongheaded. Marketers think it about themselves. It's all about me. It's not about the client. It's not about the customer. It's not about the prospect. It's about me. I need to put myself out there in this fantastical way because that's my uniqueness. But who are we trying to serve? Nearly every week, I tell people that the main benefit of this podcast, my podcast, is likely found in people's opportunity to click play, listen for a few minutes, and figure out whether I'm their cup of tea or not. It gives prospects the opportunity to find out pretty quickly if I'm a personality that they can relate to or not. Yes, I'm myself. Yes, I'm honest here. Yes, the way that you hear me talk is how I talk if we were to get face to face. It would be completely dishonest of me to speak as I do here, and then when we meet in person, I am some foul-talking, in-your-face kind of person. You would think, well, man alive, he is not at all how I thought he'd be. No, one big benefit of a podcast, if we're true to ourselves, is it gives people the opportunity when they meet us, they go, well, you know, he's just like he is in the podcast. Well, duh. Yeah, of course. For me, it's disrespectful of the prospect and the customer. I find nothing wrong with dressing and preparing for a meeting with a prospect in mind, not myself. There are going to be plenty of people who will never do business with me for whatever reason. I need to give myself the best chance possible to do business with some. For those few, I want them to see and hear and understand how important they are to my career and my business. So let's end with some questions, shall we, that might help us better figure this out. Number one, how does your attire, speech, and behavior help you differentiate yourself? Or does it? Number two, how do these things attract prospects? Well, maybe a better question, is it about attracting the right people or is it about repelling the wrong people? Number three, how do these things give success a better chance? Your success. Number four, are you really being true to who you are? Or are you being sucked into copying something that you think is popular, something that you think might work because you've seen somebody else do it? Number five, is respect and politeness part of your competitive advantage? There are tons of other questions that are worth asking. I would encourage you to keep asking the questions, keep answering the questions, and figure out what you're going to do, figure out what you're doing, find out what's working, what's not working, and what do you want to do? And closely examine this, what's working versus what isn't working. My best brilliant advice is let's all get together. Let's do way more of what works and let's stop doing what ain't working so good. Because the goal is improvement. We just want to grow as great as we possibly can as business people, as entrepreneurs, as leaders, as businesses. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. As always, the podcast is brought to you by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com. It's Bula Network, LLC, and that's the business. But the website, it's all the same, growgreat.com, BulaNetwork.com, takes you to the exact same place. All kinds of tabs there that you can click on, who I serve and how I serve them. Vistage, newest endeavor, building a CEO Vistage group here in Tarrant County. If you happen to be in the Fort Worth side of things, I'd love to hear from you. All kinds of ways to connect and contact me. Subscribe to the podcast. I appreciate you listening. Go out and make it a great week. We need to get the year started off fast now. Don't lollygag around. Let's not wait until the second quarter before we really get our wheels under us. We need to get rolling ASAP. So go out and make it great. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio.